Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Second and 14 at the 33-yard line. Same set. Two tight ends, two receivers. Here's Fred Taylor. Play action. Dropping back to throw. Martin looking down the middle of the field for Keenan McCardell. Makes the grab. There he goes. 30. There's Keenan at the 20. He's at the 10. 5. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Martin to McCardell for 67 and 6 on the scoreboard. Mark back to throw. Pocket collapsing. Steps. Is being chased. Let's a ball go for Jimmy Smith in the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
Oh, take that. Take that!
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Jaguars Today, for the first time in a while, we're not big fat liars. We are live at TIAA Bank Field. Tony, it's been a while. When it's just you or I as the main host of the show, we like to do it at World Headquarters a little more frequently, just in the comfort zone, get to see ET, better communication, all that
sure.
good stuff. We've decided to take the field trip today.
We have.
Come down, check things out. It's about as quiet around here as I kind of expected it to be, though.
Yeah, parking lot not very full.
No, we got some really good parking today over there in, what would that be? Lot, it's not J, it's lot M?
I have no idea.
It's the one right next to the Jaguar statue.
Yeah,
statue. I could practically park
statue
in the statue's
adjacent.
Lap.
Yes.
Yes. Very close today. Usually, we would agree that one of the great classic American movies is Red Dawn, right?
Sure.
But you're probably not all into the whole motif of the Wolverines right now, I'm guessing, after last night.
Not at the moment. I'm not too nervous, honestly, with the way that Kumar Rocker, who is going to be going for Vandy tonight in Game 2, has been going this postseason especially.
World Series, for those who don't know what we're talking about.
But they need to win 2 out of 2 if we're going to be national champions.
I'm sure there are others out there. Tony's the only legitimate Vanderbilt Commodore fan of any sport that I know, and as is my personality, mm-hmm. I will root for anyone I like's opposite
sure.
team.
Sure.
Their competition.
I was looking at this last week. The Big Ten has not won a baseball championship since 1966.
That seems like a long time.
Yeah, and that would be Ohio State in 66.
Wow, the Wolverines, I heard, 57 years for them.
Yeah,
right?
It was 62?
Yeah,
I think they won, yeah. So it's been a long, long time for the Big Ten to win a national title in baseball, and hopefully they have to wait at least one more year.
For your sake, hopefully. I'd love to see the celebration. It cannot come soon enough for those Wolverines. They've suffered long enough, as far as I'm concerned. All right, today, hopefully you won't suffer for the next couple hours. We'll talk Jaguar football with you, including discussing and playing back a little bit for you the Adam Schefter podcast, which I guess posted yesterday, where he individually sat down with Doug Marrone and really didn't talk about this year's Jags team as much as he talked about, coming up the coaching ladder mm-hmm. and some of his experiences as a player towards the end of the transition in Dallas from Tom Landry to Jimmy Johnson, things like that. I'd encourage you to check it out, if you want to. Just be up on everything, all the latest and what these guys are saying, because you're not going to hear much from Doug Marrone between now and July 25th, nor will you hear much from Jalen Ramsey from the sounds of things. And he was on there really for only about 5 minutes at the end. The most interesting thing he said was what he didn't say. He declined to comment when asked and to critique the slate of Jaguar quarterback opponents this year.
Yeah, he didn't go into it, and he even made a joke about it when Schefter asked about it. He's like, oh, we're doing this again, huh?
Yes.
He's like,
well,
no.
What do you expect?
Yeah, he's like, no, I'm not going to do that again. He's like, Nick Foles is who I'm
right.
looking for.
Right, and he just lavished praise on Nick Foles, as you kind of would expect him to do. Look, I know all in the past guys have said, I distinctly remember Malik Jackson, really coming to the defense of Blake Bortles. But
sure.
It seemed... I wonder, did we get the same full-throated support? Maybe we did. Guys always are going to say the right thing, but it really seemed like Jalen Ramsey was saying, you know what, I may say things about whatever, but I really believe this. This guy has nothing to prove. He is a mm-hmm. Super Bowl MVP. I want Nick to know we all have your back. Doesn't that almost need to not be stated, right? Like, when a quarterback, why wouldn't you have his back?
Sure.
Unless there was a situation maybe where not everybody felt all on board with the previous quarterback. I don't know.
Well, and
I may be reading too much into it.
Maybe, but Jalen Ramsey is the one who last year after a game came into a locker room and said something along the lines of, you know, y'all know what I'm saying, but I can't say it.
Correct.
You know, and yeah.
You can say it.
It was way too open-ended, right? So anyone could fill in the blank however they wanted
to. That's
right. Most assumed that he was talking about his quarterback at that time in Blake Bortles, and I'm not I think that's probably the right assumption to make if you're going to make one about that statement. But I think you look at when Blake left and the team was going to release him and they're not, you know, continuing with his contract, which was nuts to begin with, right? And they know it's a mistake now, even if they're not willing to admit it publicly that they made a mistake in extending Blake Bortles. But it's costing them an opportunity to maybe do some other things that they'd like to do at the moment from a free agency and contract extension standpoint. What we know at this point is we watched a bunch of guys on the offensive side of the ball when Blake Bortles was being released going, you know what, we love Blake, we wish him nothing but the best. I don't remember seeing a whole lot of guys on the defensive side of that locker room saying those things. I remember a lot of guys on the offense that played with him that said those things, but I was watching for defensive players that were willing to say those kind of things when Blake was on his way out the door, and there were a handful of them, but most of those guys, especially the dogs on that defensive side of the ball, no, they weren't talking that way about Blake on his way out the door, and I think if you got an honest response from a lot of the guys on that side of the ball, that they would be a sigh of relief. That they don't have to go into the 2019 season having no idea what to expect week to week out of the quarterback position. I think they at least have an idea of what they think they can expect out of Nick Foles week to week, which is a much more steadying influence than Blake Bortles ever was.
Yeah, look, I don't blame them
for
not feeling that way about Blake. I don't feel that way about Blake.
Me
you
either.
Know, look, it's, everybody likes to say you almost get to the point where it's obligatory. Nobody dislikes Blake personally. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about
good guy, bad quarterback.
Whatever. We're just talking about football. Bad quarterback
is
ultimately where it ended up being. Or way too inconsistent. Flashes of good quarterback, but not enough consistency in that department. We'll see if Nick Foles has that, Tony. I mean, he seems like he'll be a more consistently accurate guy, you know, and just as long as you protect him. That was one thing, though. You did have that in Blake. Blake could take a licking and keep on ticking, right? I mean, he took some shots, and you never got much sense that he was going to miss much time, right? He just seemed like one of those almost indestructible types out there. Even though you could see him limping around at times.
Sure.
You're like, oh, this guy, he's going to come back in. He's going to be just fine in that regard. And he would extend plays and pick up key first downs with his feet. And Nick Foles, we all saw the Philly special. He can run a 5-yard out route or a 2-yard out route, whatever the case may be. He's not going to give you that like Blake Bortles gave you that.
No, and what we've certainly, it's been a story for Nick Foles to this point in his career, durability is an issue. Like it has been to this point in his career, and now he's going to be the guy really for the first time. I mean, there have been some times where he was almost kind of sort of the guy for a couple different spots, but never really committed to the way that Jacksonville is committed to Nick Foles this offseason. So for someone who hasn't been able to play a full season at the quarterback position, that's a big question mark, and he's replacing a guy that was really what Blake Bortles had in spades. You knew he'd be available every week. Whether you wanted him to be was another question, but you knew he'd be there if you needed to call upon Blake Bortles. Nick Foles, if you want to ask that question about him, I think it's fair at this point.
Is there dead money left over from Malik Jackson's contract this year that they're carrying? I'm just wondering.
I don't know.
I can't remember off the top of my head if there is. It wouldn't surprise me if there were a few million dollars. In fact, I would expect there to be a little bit because he had such a large contract.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I know a lot of guys in Philly love Nick Foles, right? And I continue, and I know you do as well, anytime you talk to anyone up in Philadelphia that covers the Eagles, that had they gone with Nick Foles, there would have been a segment of the locker room that would have felt that was the right decision to make.
$4 million.
$4 million. And, you know, Malik Jackson was a guy, by the end of the season, was kind of losing his starting spot here, right? Had declined. I see a story yesterday, or at least declined in his level of play here. Not that necessarily he's over the hill as an athlete or anything like that, because I don't think he is. But I saw a story coming out of Philadelphia yesterday how Malik Jackson has been the tone setter for that defensive line. That's a very talented defensive line. That now, keep in mind, Fletcher Cox has been out this offseason. He's got an injury that he's working towards getting back to full health. So maybe, you know, on the field, that would be a clear case of your best player, Fletcher Cox, leading the way.
Sure.
But it is funny how I don't even want to categorize him as the Jaguars trash, but one guy can fall out of favor for one team for a variety of reasons, some of them economic here, obviously, in Jacksonville with Malik Jackson. And with a fresh start and new surroundings, can come in and be looked at as maybe not the savior, but a lot more than he was when he left the last place, right?
Sure, and more like he was when he got here.
Yeah, oh, without question. Like, you know, I don't think they regret the contract they gave Malik Jackson, because in the end, he played very well. He was an all-pro. I'm talking about overall now. $4 million in dead cap money is not ridiculous for a guy that you really maxed out in the early stages of free agency when he was available. So I think they got out of him what they hoped to get out of him for the most part. You always want more, but come on.
Yeah, you get 3 years of him playing at the kind of level he played at, especially for that first 2.5, right? Like, you feel all right about it. And Malik, you know, in the last 8 games of his career here in Jacksonville, didn't earn the back half of that contract.
No.
They decided to go a different direction. They had drafted Taven Bryant. Like, there are a bunch of reasons why they went the direction they did.
Had he played well, I don't know if economically they would have brought him back anyway.
Yeah, they were
based on the numbers and how they drafted.
Sure, and they needed to loosen some things up, right, on that defensive line. So it made sense for them. We all kind of saw the writing on the wall. I mean, Malik Jackson talked about it, right? Like, they're always looking to replace you. That's this league. They are always looking for somebody else to come in and take your job. So he's looking around. They draft Taven Bryant, and he's like, all right. You know, it's like, here we
go. First round, right.
Yeah, it's like, here we go. Like,
that's how it is.
Yeah,
it's just the way it is.
He knows the writing's on the wall, at least to some degree at that point. And, no, he didn't play great, you know, last season. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that he's the type of guy that would show up in a different spot and be a spark plug guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of personality he has. And especially if the big guy along that defensive line and Fletcher Cox isn't going to be there, yeah, I could totally see Malik Jackson being that kind of personality.
Right. It's interesting because he goes there to Philly's got a lot of pass rushing talent, a lot of talent along the defensive front. Chris Connolly comes here, and it's similar, right, in that he was just a guy in Kansas City. He comes to Jacksonville, and he's the guy that has been the most consistent wide receiver throughout the OTA minicamp season, portion of the offseason. And, you know, is that more a case to simply because the Jags don't have a lot of standout players at that position? You know, I wonder that, right? Like, we've seen this kind of play out in the past. You get a guy who's just borderline, he's so-so somewhere else, and he comes in, and because you need him to be something, you start thinking he's better than he is necessarily.
Yeah, I should go check the archive and see how people were talking about Dante Moncrief at this point last season.
Oh, no, you know, no question.
Because I think it's very similar to the way that they're talking about Chris Conley. And obviously Pittsburgh is having the same conversation about Moncrief that we had last
year. Right now they're saying Dante Moncrief's in line to be the number two guy. He's got, like, his foot in the door ahead of James Washington, who they drafted last year, and ahead of Deontay Johnson, who they drafted this year, who I think is going to turn out to be a nice player. Down the line, Pittsburgh has had a lot of success with those mid-round picks hitting, and they've missed on the Lima Swedes of the world as well. They've taken their shots on guys, but overall, I think their percentage is pretty good once you get outside the first round of drafting wide receivers compared to the league average. Anyway, today we will ask you, and we do ask you, our question of the day, presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Which athlete in any sport would you most like to listen to a podcast that they hosted? Does that make sense? I think that makes sense. Let me see how I worded it. Which athlete in any sport would you be most interested in listening to them host their own podcast? There you go. In other words, who do you think has the most stories to tell? Who's got the most engaging personality? Who would you want to listen to? And some people have suggested some of athletes that already have podcasts. That's fine. Think a little bit deeper. Think of a guy that you haven't heard in that vein. And who would you really like to subscribe to and check out on a regular basis? We'll talk about that today. We'll hear some of the comments coming up from Doug Marrone on Adam Schefter's podcast a little bit later on. We'll get to Jalen Ramsey's thoughts as well, as he sat down with the ESPN NFL reporter as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at TIAA Bank Field. You can get in touch with the program in a variety of ways on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL. Fat Tony on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or the phone lines, or the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures, at 641 641- 1010. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we're live at the bank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. And if you've been following along, 1010 XL, along with StoneCore Outdoor Furniture and Regency Electric, has been asking fans to vote on their favorite games in Jaguars franchise history. And the vote is in. And you, the fans, have selected the game from January 5th, 2008, the playoff victory over Pittsburgh 31-29, is your third favorite game in franchise history. Oh, by the way, I guess it just goes to show you, you know, when you've got something competitive, it's more memorable or something along those lines, because the 62-7 win over Miami was voted number four. So you preferred, you liked, however you want to describe it, the win over Pittsburgh on the road by a much more narrow margin, much more compelling game. I mean, it was compelling. Look, if you're a Jag fan and you weren't compelled seeing them roll up, what was it, like 41 first half points against Miami, then I don't know what to give you at this right. point. Stay tuned throughout the day. XL Primetime and the Franchi Show will count you down to the game that you voted on as your favorite in franchise history. I would have thought Pittsburgh, that game would have been very high up on the list. Mm-hmm. So not surprised. Maybe it's the Denver game in 96. I don't know all what's preceded it. So I don't want to, I could be mentioning one that got voted out. Does the Morton Anderson game on that alone, because of the importance of the game? To me, it's the most important game in franchise history to this point, at least most important win
sure.
in franchise history. To me, to this point, because who knows how the late 90s go if they don't have that first run to give themselves that confidence that they could show up in 97 and just go out there and whip some tail. Anyway, does that win, you think, is the favorite game in franchise history?
Probably.
I mean, it's most important. The game itself?
Well, it's, you know... Again, and I don't know, we know what 3 and 4 on the list are, right?
Right.
We have that in front of us. I wouldn't be surprised if the two playoff games from 96 are 1-2.
I could see that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if both those are going to be 1-2. I think the Morton Anderson miss could be in there, and I wouldn't be stunned if the most recent playoff victory over Pittsburgh was close in there, right? Just because that is...
Sure. Depends on who's voting, right?
That's the first one that you've had in a decade. You know, it had been a long time. You know, they hadn't been home for a playoff game since 99, where that Miami game we're talking about there. They hadn't been
right.
home
if,
for a playoff
if
game.
If you're 25 years old, you were like, what, 5 at the time of that game?
Yeah.
Right? So it probably doesn't have a big impact on your memory like the Garrard run against Pittsburgh Steelers would.
Sure. Yeah, I think my vote would probably go to the Denver game in 96. Would be my favorite Jaguars game of all time. With Buffalo being a close second for me.
Anyway, be listening today. We'll continue to count you down.
With Boselli dominating Bruce.
Your favorite games in franchise history being voted on. So there you have it. We will we'll get to Doug Marone. I don't want to start Doug here, I don't think, because... the first he tells a story about the influences on his coaching career. Mm-hmm. You know, the most important influences, and he worked with a lot of guys. He played under, or at least was around, guys like Tom Landry and Jimmy Johnson, and you know, his father-in-law is Boots Donnelly, who's
sure.
a renowned coach and has a lot of other big-time influences. So he gave a really thoughtful answer, and I don't want to rush through it, so I think maybe we'll push that off here for a couple minutes.
Sure. I thought the Landry thing was interesting, you know, listening to Marone talk about it on that on Schefter's podcast, where, you know, he was in the room the last time that Tom Landry addressed the Dallas Cowboys as a team. Doug Marone was in that room as a rookie offensive lineman, and it was interesting listening to him. And, you know, Adam was like, well, what was it like being in there? He's like, I just felt like I shouldn't have been. Like,
right, like I didn't belong here. Like,
yeah.
I'm looking at all these guys that have been with him for years,
yeah,
and they've got all this bond, and here I am like,
yeah,
what am I doing
I look
here?
Over there, there's Ed Too Tall Jones. Like, why am I in this room?
Right, and it wasn't so much like I don't belong in the league. It was like, this is like an emotional goodbye between
Tom Landry.
The stoic Tom Landry, and he's not so stoic in these moments. So it was good stuff. I'd encourage you to check it out. Anywhere you find podcasts, the Adam Schefter podcast is, you know, I don't know if he's a particularly adept interviewer, but he lets these guys run with, you know, some, I thought some interesting stuff.
Sure.
Particularly, I thought the Marone stuff was probably much more interesting. I mean, Jalen Ramsey's talking a lot about his brand and all that stuff, and that's fine, but it doesn't compel me all that much.
Yeah, the Marone stuff, I really enjoy listening to Doug Marone just talk about whatever's flitting into his mind at that moment, right? And I think he's a lot of fun to listen to talk about football because he's been around it forever, and he's had all these different experiences. So I thought it was interesting, you know, listening to Doug and about what he does in his spare time, which is not much, it sounded like, when it was all said and done. But I did think it was interesting getting kind of that insight behind the curtain a little bit with Marone, a little bit more so than Jalen Ramsey, who, as you said, it was more about the brand and the switch to Adidas than it was anything else, like, really personal going on with Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, and that's fine.
That's
fine.
I don't have an issue with it.
Right,
yeah.
He can talk about whatever he likes. It just wasn't, to me, I didn't learn much more. I learned more about Doug Marone than I did about Jalen.
And he didn't drop any of the contract stuff or anything like that. He wasn't talking about any of
that. No, no. Right. I mean, look, it is what it is on that. He knows he's not getting one this offseason. We know, everyone knows he's not getting one this offseason. You don't need to beat that drum every single time that a microphone is put in your face. On the text line, which is built by Lifetime Enclosures, somebody said an Allen Iverson podcast would be gold. And I hate to do this because I don't know what prompted it, and I hope this person is being a little bit facetious or a lot bit facetious, but sometime during the last hour of the drill, somebody texted in, thanks for the spoiler alert for the end of The Shining. You don't get 35 years or what? It's been at least 35,
sure.
It's been like closer to 40 years probably, right, since The Shining came out.
Can I spoil the book for people, or is it just the movie?
Is it a different ending in the book?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't read the book.
Yes.
I don't care if you spoil the book. I'm not going to read it.
Stephen King has never liked the movie adaptation.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he gets mad talking about what Kubrick did with The Shining, despite the fact that many consider it maybe the best horror movie of all time.
Hmm.
He does not like Kubrick's interpretation of his book.
So apparently, like the original guy who did the Chucky movies is really upset with this new reboot of Chucky. Yeah. And there's a lot of animosity. I saw the story yesterday, and to the point that they could not come close, anything that touched on them replicating any one of Chucky's, quote, kills from any of the Chucky movies. Like in one, he's supposed to chop off a guy's head. Okay. And they're like, nope, back in Chucky 3 or Chucky 2 or whatever, he cut off someone's head. And they're like, well, lots of people get their heads cut off in horror movies.
Sure.
It's not really specific. Nope, can't do it. So they had to change what they're going to do. So I can definitely see that. By the way, not that it has any bearing on anything, except that you brought up the Stephen King not liking the ending of The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Clear and Present Danger, to me, might have been the best, most accurate representation of a book to movie that I can recall. You know, like they always switch up something in the whole thing, you know,
sure,
and all these things. But Clear and Present Danger, I felt like, you know, Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
And that was one of the Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan movies. Just felt like it was, like, taken right almost page for page right out of there. The other one is Shooter, that movie by Mark Wahlberg that I cannot not watch when it's on television.
Watch the show?
I did watch a show. I think it's coming back for a third season.
Season 3, yeah.
I don't know if it's out yet.
I know Rue was really excited about it on Friday.
Like right at the end of the month. It's okay. The movie was fantastic, I thought. The book was excellent, and the movie was pretty faithful. It's like The Firm. They completely ended the movie differently than the book, the John Grisham book. Now we're going back a ways now. So we've cut out a percentage of the audience.
Rank
here
the Tom Clancy adaptations.
I'm telling you, Clear and Present Danger is number one. And Some of All Fears is maybe in last place. And then everything else just kind of falls in between. Sometimes we get serious answers. Sometimes I don't know how to take answers. Like the first response we got to the question today of which athlete you'd like to listen to host their own podcast was Joe DiMaggio. Now, knowing that Joe is dead, he's not going to be doing a podcast. I'm going to take it that that person would like to hear the stories of Joe DiMaggio, who was married to Marilyn Monroe, center fielder for the New York Yankees, you know, really a guy sure. who was one of the most recognizable people in the United States probably for a long, long time. So I'm going to take it that he wants to hear the stories he has to tell. Then I got one that is definitely serious from Melissa Simpson Lee. She wanted to hear a combination of Marta from Brazil's national women's team, Abby Wambach, and one of the Thai national soccer players to talk about the importance and advancement of women's sports in their country. Hmm. So that to me, I'm going to take with zero sarcasm.
Yeah.
And I did watch a Women's World Cup yesterday. They didn't look like a hopefully that was, you know, the like they say in a lot of sports, you got your wake-up call. Hopefully that was the wake-up call for the U.S. women's
Yeah, no doubt.
Yesterday.
You know, that one that you got to struggle through. And if you're going to do that kind of, like, I would think you'd want to add at least one of the more prominent European women in there, too. That way you're getting, like, all four regions of the world.
Who is it? Give me a prominent European woman soccer player. Tony, what can you do for me?
Which one it would be.
Give me one.
I don't know.
He tried to get away with, I don't know which one it will be.
Know. Yeah, I don't know.
You don't have a name in the Rolodex on the tip of your tongue.
I do not, no.
In other words, all right.
Fair enough. I would think you'd want to hit all four, right?
Did I tell you my soccer, my little soccer anecdote? I mentioned this last week on the show. You probably missed it, right? I talked to the guy who runs SiriusXM FC, the mm-hmm. soccer channel.
Yeah.
And so I can, you know, I didn't congratulate, but I just, you know, what do I know about soccer, right? I said, hey, the women dominated 13-0. I said, oh, I guess I should say 13-0. And he said, actually, that's a funny story. When I got the job, I talked to this English soccer announcer, and the guy said, no, you don't say nil. He goes, that's not a soccer term. It's a British term. He goes, that's how we say. You say nothing. You're an American. You say zero. You say nothing. He goes, and by the way, don't call it a pitch. He goes, that has nothing to do with soccer. We call everything a pitch. We call it a hockey pitch when they play. It's literally, he said, don't call it a pitch. He goes, you're not British. Call it a field. So there you go. I don't know which side of the whole nil and pitch linguistic line you come down on, Fat Tony. But now you know what the right side
is.
Hey,
that's interesting.
All right, we'll come. I don't know if it is or not. But we'll come back and we'll hear some actual interesting stuff. Doug Marrone on the Adam Schefter podcast, including on the influences in his coaching career, talking about Boots Donnelly, how much who's tougher to answer to, the owner or the wife after a loss? So we'll get into all that coming up next. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you, live at TIAA Bank Field on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at TIAA Bank Field. ET back at World Headquarters holding things down there. If you'd like to weigh in on today's question of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916, you can do that in your typical variety of ways on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony on the Jaguars Today Facebook page and the phone lines and the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures always open to you at 641-1010. The question of the day stated this way: which athlete in any sport would you be most interested in listening to them host their own podcast? And I'm going for more, you know, guys that have never hosted a podcast before, don't mm-hmm. currently host one, but whatever. If you are fans of a particular one that's out there right now, you're welcome to mention that as well. I don't know if Jalen Ramsey would be the most compelling guy on a podcast. If he were to be the Jalen Ramsey of the GQ article, where it was no holds barred, but I think what happens, Tony, is that these guys go out there, they're brash, they say something, and they get a wave of backlash, and even Jalen Ramsey now, you can talk about it's maturity, or he just doesn't want to have to deal with it anymore. I don't think he's changed in his mind the way he feels about quarterbacks, or his, you know, I don't think a person goes from 1 year saying, this is how I judge people, and I'm this, and this, to, oh, I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think he still goes on. He's just declining to share those thoughts. And my guess is because he got more negative attention for it than positive attention for it.
Sure.
Makes sense, but it's just a shame, you know, when you talk about guys hosting a podcast, I'm going to assume that anyone who is answered today as that person is – going to be 100% forthright. That's why you want to hear from them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us all the dirt.
Yeah, you want the real story.
I want the dirt.
Behind something, right?
I'll be honest. If it bleeds, it leads. That's all what I'm about. I'm just the typical guy who rubbernecks an accident. You know, if it's more uncomfortable, potentially personally catastrophic, sign me up for it. I'm right there for it, man. You know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
There's room for nice, you know, well thought out stuff as well. Give me a little bit more. I like the sensational stuff. I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I would say that human history says yes.
That's why we're still talking about Jalen Ramsey's GQ article.
Yeah.
Right?
He was asked about it by Adam Schefter today.
We'll hear later his comments about Nick Foles. They're very nice and pretty matter of fact, and what you'd expect to hear about your starting quarterback in almost any NFL locker room, and nobody's going to care in a week from now.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to answer that question differently.
About Foles?
Not necessarily about Foles, because he was just asked about, you know, are we going to – what do you think of the quarterbacks you're playing this year?
Mm-hmm.
And he digressed into a conversation about Foles.
Yes,
and I was like – he immediately said, oh, we're doing that, are we? And then he's like, I'm not going to go back into that. And then I thought he was going to say, I'm most looking forward to playing Deshaun Watson, because he loves him some Deshaun Watson. Like, I thought that's where that answer was going to go. Instead, he pivoted on me and came back to Jacksonville and talked about Nick Foles instead.
I don't doubt he loves Deshaun Watson. I wonder how much of it was also him wondering why Deshaun Watson wasn't playing for them. But then, if that were the case, that was the Leonard Fournette draft, right? Yeah, it was. Absolutely. It was 2 years ago.
Yes.
So there you go. He wouldn't have his Instagram buddy to chat with.
It's true. Right.
I think the Jags would be in a lot better place because of it.
Right. And if you were going to choose a guy like Jalen Ramsey for a podcast as like your answer today, I think he needs a foil like a Leonard Fournette. I think he needs that kind of thing too for him to be.
To bring it out in
his most entertaining, yeah.
Right. Not just to sit there, because I've interviewed Jalen before and he's very, you know, he's very, he doesn't come across as this crazy, brash guy, you know?
No.
I think you're right. Depending on the setting and his comfort level and, you
right.
know.
Which is how I view any of that Instagram stuff that you see when it's him and Leonard. I'm like, this is him relaxed with a friend and a teammate. And it's kind of cool to see it. And so I don't take any of it like too seriously when he's in that. So when he's talking about his contract and everyone's reacting to that video, I'm just like, this is him hanging out with his friend. Like, we're getting to hear the conversation that when they're in the locker room and Leonard asks, you know, Jalen about the contract, he goes, woo!
I think we're hearing it to a degree.
I still
think you're aware, though, if you're filming this, that you're filtering it to some degree.
Sure.
I think it would be even more over the top if we heard the innermost conversation.
We heard the press conference version of it, right? They told me we're not going to deal with it this year, and, you know, I'm going to just go out there and bust it and be as good as I can be this year. And then you have the conversation with Leonard about it, and he's like, woo!
Right. It's a lot more. Yeah. It's closer to real.
Yeah.
I don't think it's 100% there. Doug Marrone on the Adam Schefter podcast. So let's listen in. This is a long answer, but I thought it was a very interesting. I like listening to Doug Marrone. He's a good storyteller. He's got a lot of football history under his belt. And so along the way, after they had been chatting for a few minutes, Adam Schefter asked Doug Marrone about who was the biggest influence on his coaching career, and here's how he answered that.
I think it's twofold. I think the first part of it is, you know, I had a Hall of Fame college coach in Dick McPherson. I had a lot of great coaches that have gone through Syracuse. And then, you know, obviously Miami, I had unbelievable, you know, John Sandusky was the line coach. He's passed. He was with, you know, played in Cleveland, was with Coach Shuler in Baltimore, which Coach Shuler, you know, who's in my mind one of the best coaches I've ever, assistant coaches, been around. And then you go through all the teams, and I've had all these great coaches. And then you decide to go into coaching, and, you know, you want to take all the great ideas from everyone and kind of put them into your own words. And, you know, you find out, you know, you make mistakes. You know, you try to go too fast. And, you know, obviously I started at, you know, Division III, you know, Cortland State, and then Coast Guard Academy, and kind of worked my way up. So I think you find that. But I would say, you know, then you get to the NFL, which is different. You know, it really is. And my first job was with Herm Edwards, you know, at the New York Jets. And, you know, the guy who probably had the most influence on me and coaching in the NFL was a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Ray. So Jimmy Ray, you know, he's been in the league for a long period of time. And, you know, so basically they hired me right out of college. So I was, I think at that time, the youngest offensive line coach. And, you know, Jimmy was, you know, like, obviously he became my mentor, but he was kind of like, you know, making sure I didn't screw shit up. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have any problems. And, you know, I learned a lot. So I put a lot into, you know, I'll give you an example. The first meeting I have with the offensive line, and we had a veteran group. So, and I was always appreciative of, you know, them being able to open up. And Kevin Mawai, who obviously is going into the Hall of Fame, you know, had a huge part in that, you know, of, you know, you coming in, you're coaching a guy that's been a bunch of Pro Bowls, and, you know, just being able to, you know, just listen and accept things, you know, not making it hard on the new coach, you know, coming in, or first year coach, or the college coach, whatever you want to say, you know. But Jimmy's in the back, so I put a ton of time in, you know, I got everything ready just like a teacher, you know, I have all my lessons laid out, and okay, here comes lesson one. I go in there and Jimmy's sitting in the back, and I'm up on the board and I'm coaching my butt off, and, you know, so I'm like sweating, and, you know, we're getting ready to take the field, and I go to Jimmy. I said, well, what do you think? You know, I want you to critique me. Could I do anything better? He goes, well, we're going to find out about a half hour when those players get on the field and see how they play. You know, and it was little things like that, you know, of you can, you know, really, you know, you, if you think you did a great job in the classroom and it doesn't carry over into the field, you really haven't done a great job. So, you know, he's the one that, you know, probably has, you know, I would say that was the biggest influence on me. And then, you know, I coached a lot of great places in college too. I mean, I worked my way up from, you know, Cortland State, Coast Guard Academy, Northeastern, and then Georgia Leary, you know, really gave me my first break coming into Georgia Tech as an operations guide and moved to tight ends and offensive line. You know, then Jim Donnan at Georgia and then Philip Fulmer at Tennessee, you know, prior to me going to the New York Jets. So I was very fortunate. And then, you know, I had a great relationship when, you know, I went to the Jets with Herm, and then, you know, obviously he leaves, and then, you know, I was able to hook up with Sean Payton, which was, you know, really, really great for me. So we had the same type of philosophy and as far as offense, and, you know, he was just a great communicator, and, you know, I was fortunate to have a great quarterback in Drew Brees, and I think that opened up some opportunities for me. And, you know, when Syracuse University, you know, reached out to me and opened it up, I felt like I needed to go back. So I went back there. You know, we tried to change the program around. I thought we, you know, obviously, like most coaches say, we left it in better shape than, you know, we took it, so, you know, or took over. And then from there, I went to Buffalo. And then from Buffalo here.
You know, it gives a lot of credit to Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, in all these spots, you can coach in all these places. You can have a great philosophy if you don't have the players.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Like, I won't lie. Like, when he said, you know, Sean Payton and I and our similar offensive philosophy, I was like, really? Like, in my head, I was like, where's that?
If we had Drew, right, you might see that. Okay? I mean, yeah, which goes to show you maybe, you know, you either, A, you coach to the personnel,
sure,
that you have, but, B, how much influence does Tom Coughlin have on this operation? But Tom Coughlin, it wasn't like Tom Coughlin was some conservative offensive coach. Jimmy and Keenan were flying all over the place, mm-hmm, and he had receivers put up big numbers in New York as well. So
sure,
it is a little bit interesting where they landed with that, seeing how,
yeah,
he and Sean Payton are twins, two peas in a pod offensively.
As Burnell said the last time we got to talk to him, you know, talking about how aggressive Tom was willing to be until you got inside the 20. And then he was like, he put me on a leash.
Right. Then,
essentially,
when we got down
in that part of the field.
Yeah, we saw your end zone picks at times. All right. Boots Donnelly, Tony, mm-hmm, is the father-in-law of, and thus the father of Helen Marone, but the father-in-law of Doug Marone, who was a guy who played at Middle Tennessee State and started out as a high school coach, went to his alma mater, won a state championship in Nashville in the Class 3A, went as an assistant at Vandy, right there in Nashville as well. Coach Austin Peay for a couple of years and spent 20 years at his alma mater. So he went to his high school alma mater, coached him to a state championship, spent 20 years at Middle Tennessee State as a head coach, and earned induction into the College Football Hall of Fame because of it. So along the way in this podcast, Doug Marone told a quick anecdote about his father-in-law and how his son sees – his own dad, Doug Marone, compared to Boots Donnelly.
My father-in-law gets inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame. My son is going, Dad, you think he'll ever get into the Hall of Fame? No. He goes, and then my father-in-law has a statue in front of the stadium of him, right? So my son, again, he was smaller at the time. He's like, Dad, you think you'll ever get a statue in front of the stadium? No. So, Dad, Granddad's a better coach than you? Yeah, he's a better coach than me. Yeah, absolutely.
Getting shade from your kid at the early stage. He's very, I mean, that's, I find it hard for me to separate sometimes how much I like Doug Marrone. You know what I mean? It's just like, I like him so much as a guy, as a storyteller and all this stuff. Look, 5-11 is not good enough, and it's not going to be good enough again this year. But I hope he gets to 11-5 or something like that, and we get right back on that 2017 trajectory, because I want to keep this guy around here for a while.
No doubt. I'm right there with you. It's fun listening to Doug Marrone just talk about football stuff, like football adjacent stuff. And it was kind of cool hearing him on the Schefter Pocket. That, and anyone who's ever talked to a 5-year-old kid, that's the answer that you would expect. Do you have a statue?
Wait, no. Where's your statue?
Are you
going to
get a statue? No.
No.
Oh, so you're not as good as that guy? No.
No, I'm not. And it's much easier, too, right? And as he points out in this, his wife Helen was a litigator, I believe, a prosecutor. And so he's not going to win many arguments with her on anything, including football. We'll hear that coming up when he was asked about, does he still get a call from Coach Donnelly from time to time? And he quickly passes it off to how he has to not only deal with that aspect of it, a legendary Hall of Fame coach kind of looking over and critiquing what he does, but the daughter of that Hall of Fame coach and her opinions on football and how that weighs heavily in the Marrone household. So we'll hear more from Coach Doug Marrone coming up as he appeared on the Adam Schefter podcast a little bit later on. Jalen Ramsey's thoughts as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at the bank, TIAA Bank Field. ET's back at World Headquarters. Coming up, we've got this date in football and the Roland Reach roll around the National Football League. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, just a couple of odds and ends here on this date in football history. June 25th, 2019. We go back to 1978, and had a big baby born on that day, literally. Marcus Stroud, who they called Big Baby, 41 years old today, born on this date in 1978, a three-time Pro Bowler with the Jacksonville Jaguars, played in 100 regular season games with 84 starts. That's because in the first season, Tony, he was credited as playing in all 16 games, but was coming off the bench, part of a tackle rotation. Mm-hmm. So a very durable player, particularly the first 4 or 5 years of his career. I don't think he missed a single game in the first 5 years of his career as a Jacksonville Jaguar. Marcus Stroud, 41 years old today, and a famous passing on this date. Boy, what a talented player. Jerome Brown, defensive tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles, died on this date in 1992, victim of a car wreck, and at the age of 27 years old, they had a ridiculous front four on that team. Jerome Brown, a part of that, and passing away on this date in the offseason in 1992. That's what we have for you on this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill will reportedly meet with NFL officials on Wednesday. Hill has been banned from the team facility amid the still ongoing child abuse investigation. Hill's 3-year-old son had his arm broken. The child was removed from the custody of Hill and the child's mother and has remained away from the parents while the Department of Children and Families continues their own investigation. The prosecutor's office in Kansas City has already said that they will not be pursuing criminal charges, with the district attorney saying that he believes a crime was committed, but that there isn't enough evidence to clearly establish who committed that crime. The Rams and owner Stan Kroenke will be paying former PSL holders in St. Louis $24 million in the settlement of a lawsuit brought forth after the Rams left St. Louis following the 2016 NFL season. PSL holders in St. Louis had bought in for the length of the lease with the city, which was 30 years. There were 9 years remaining on that lease, so the PSL holders will be getting 30% of their original purchase price plus damages in the lawsuit. Dallas wide receiver Amari Cooper told Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, that his goal for the upcoming season is 2,000 receiving yards, as long as he sets it reasonable, right?
My goal, too.
Yeah, Cooper, who the Cowboys traded for from the Oakland Raiders last season, is entering the final year of his contract, so that he's not thinking too much about the next contract, but does want to spend it with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I don't know all the ins and outs of this public seat license dispute between the fans in St. Louis and the Kroenke group there, but, you know, why do I feel like he's going to come out on top anyway, even though he has to pay back 30% that really wasn't his to begin with?
Sure.
Depending on what the damages are they going to offset all the interest he made on holding all their money for years now?
Right.
Right? I mean, I don't know. I just – why do I have a feeling the guy who has $8 billion will come out ahead in this deal?
Yeah, Kroenke's not going to get hurt by it.
No.
You know, like, he's not going to get hurt by that kind of settlement, but, you know – what are you supposed to do if you're in St. Louis? Like, this is all you had left to do.
No, look, I don't blame them for trying to recoup some of their money that they felt was deserved to them. It's just that you've got to, you know, as the little guy, you got to jump through all the hoops and wait years to get it. And then, okay, so this has come down. Does this mean this won't be appealed? You know, I mean, like, how long, you know, these kind of things. The guys with the stack of cash
sure
can win on attrition on these kind of deals, unfortunately, sometimes. All right. In relation to me, Doug Marone's got a big fat stack of cash. So good for him. I hope he wins a bunch of games to go along with it this year. Let's pick back up on what we were listening to earlier. Just a few of the highlights. And we'd encourage you to go check out the entire Adam Schefter podcast. You can hear Doug Marone's on there for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then Jalen Ramsey, the final seven or eight, something along those lines. And they appeared individually talking about a variety of stuff. Not really breaking down the season so much coming up. Just more historical stuff with Doug and his ties to Boots Donnelly as his father-in-law, as we talked about in the last segment. This next answer, it starts out to a question about whether or not he still hears from coach. Does he still call you, you know, kind of get on you or pick your brain, or what are you doing, what are you thinking? And it quickly transitioned into the influence that the lovely Helen Marone has in the Doug Marone household when it comes to football. So here's Doug Marone answering a question that starts out about whether or not Coach Boots Donnelly still calls him after games.
Does Coach Donnelly ever call you and say, what the hell are you doing? What the hell are you thinking?
All the time. All the time. You know, you got to remember now, before I get to him, I've got to go through my wife. Who, you know, I used to say in college football, I said, you know, I actually married someone that's been to more college conventions than myself, you know, because coach would take the whole family with them, you know. So, you know, she knows football, which is good and bad. It's good, you know, when it comes to, hey, that she knows the schedule. She knows you're not going to be around. You know, you're going to be away. You know, what's tough is, you know, I'll give you an example. We were in New Orleans, and we lost to a team that we should have beaten, okay? We come out, we go 14-0 real quick, you know, up, and then all of a sudden, you know, we lose the game. And I'm usually the last person out of the locker room. It just takes a fat guy like me a long time to get changed. But so I'm walking out, and obviously we lost, so I'm pissed off, right? You don't want to talk to anyone. So there's my wife and the kids, and Helen says, you know, I need to know what happened. What the hell happened out there? How come so-and-so did this? How come so-and-so did that? Talking about my players, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, look, I just played the game. I just stood in that locker and went through the whole game again in my mind, you know, what's going on. I'm done. I don't want to talk about it. She goes, well, you have to talk about it. I said, why? She said, because I'm the one that's going to be on the car line tomorrow, and everyone's going to ask me questions, and I want to know the damn answers.
It's pretty fun. And there's some other stuff in there, too, about living in the Bronx, you know, and if you have these kind of discussions, where he lived, you know,
yeah,
everyone shares walls, right?
Yeah,
in these,
he was
like,
talking
brownstone
about,
apartments.
Yeah, because he's got the farm up in Tennessee.
Yes.
And he was like, yeah, I bought a farm, basically in response to, I had grown up in a neighborhood where you shared walls with
needed
people.
Needed some space.
Yeah, so like he said, I just wanted to be able to go get my mail and my underwear. And so now I can do that and yell at whoever I want to, and there's no neighbor there to give me a hard time about
you
it.
You think about it. Look, you have a coach's daughter. She's going to get it, right? You're going to move. Now, she was lucky. Her dad, coach at Middle Tennessee State. They had
sure.
a lot of stability. He was there for 20 years, right? Not everybody has that. But, and he did coach in Nashville, you know, at the high school alma mater at Vandy. So there's probably a lot of stability relative to a lot of coaches. But she probably saw a lot of coaches, assistants come and go, got it, you know, understand, obviously into football. And so you have, there's benefits to that come with it. The drawbacks, as they may be, are, look, I'm done. I want to shut it down mentally. Like, there's no, I don't want to hear another word about it. And now I've got to explain to my significant other all the ins and outs of everything that I've just kind of mentally gone through. So the give and take of being married to a football wife,
sure,
so to speak.
And pretty great that it includes, look, she's going to have to answer these questions tomorrow. Doug.
Right.
Give me,
like,
a good answer.
I need good answers. I don't need this fluff stuff. Oh, I don't know. No, I need to know whose responsibility was that in coverage. I'd like to just – what I'd like to do, Tony, is be the fly on the wall just for those conversations, and we'd be much more informed then on Mondays as we look back on Jaguar wins and losses.
Sure. One more cut here from head coach Doug Marrone, who joined Adam Schefter on the Adam Schefter podcast. Which you can get anywhere, I'm assuming, iTunes,
wherever you go to get your podcasts,
sure. I'm sure you can find it if you want to hear the entire conversation. But one more cut here from Doug Marrone, who along the same kind of lines was just asked about who he answers to after these games, and he mentioned again his wife, and obviously you got to answer to the owner of whatever team you're with at that time too.
Yeah, I would say in my past, my wife's the toughest one, you know, because everyone else you can kind of, you know, it's going to end. But not when it's with your wife. It can go into 2-3 in the morning. It can be all night, and you know. But yeah, I think it's good. I mean, you know, she's shooting you straight, and whatever she's seeing, you know that that's what the people are saying. You know?
All right. Basically, he was being asked, you know, what you got to answer, yeah, to owner and wife. What's tougher? You know, I don't get the sense that Shad Khan is calling Doug Marrone after every loss.
No.
and grilling him.
That is funny, though. It's like, I know the conversation with the owner is going to end. Like, I'm going to get to leave this room. Like, I'm going home with these questions, and they won't stop until she's done asking them. Like, it's going to be nonstop until she gets the answer she wants, or, you know, I'm going to have to continue to deal with whatever happened in this game.
Coming up, we'll hear Jalen Ramsey, some of the answers he gave to some of the questions Adam Schefter posed on his podcast yesterday, featuring Doug Marrone and Jalen. Also, reading the latest piece at Jaguars.com from Johnny O, talking about 25 games for 25 seasons, talked about the 1997 season opener with Rob Johnson, and wanted to go down memory lane on that one for a few minutes as well. That was the game. That was his only start in a Jaguar uniform, and his performance on that day enabled the Jaguars to go out and trade Rob Johnson, not only for the pick to turn into Fred Taylor, but also the pick to turn into Tavian Banks. Could you imagine if Tavian Banks had stayed healthy? What a double decker coup that would have been. That was a coup enough getting Freddie T, let's be honest. But, I mean, Tavian Banks was a pretty interesting player back in the day. Pretty devastating injury shut down his career. So we'll get into that as well coming up. If you want to be a part of it, 641-1010 on the phone line or the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, got a few odds and ends we want to get to here. We're going to start off here in a moment with Jalen Ramsey's comments on the Adam Schefter podcast yesterday, at least it posted yesterday. Also, NFL.com with an article on young potential breakout pass rushers for 2019. So we'll talk about that, and I wanted to touch on John Osier's piece at Jaguars.com talking about the opener in 1997, the Rob Johnson game, what you can call the Rob, his only start. I think he threw for 260 in that game, a couple of scores. I know he ran for a touchdown in that game, left due to injury, came back in. We'll get into that a little bit. I thought it was a good read and, you know, kind of a trip down memory lane, but
20-24, 294, two touchdowns.
294. Okay.
Yeah,
for some reason, I thought it was 260.
Yeah.
Two touchdowns and a rushing TD as well. 1010XL, by the way, along with StoneCore Outdoor Furniture and Regency Electric, has been asking fans to vote on their favorite games in franchise history, and the vote is in. You selected the January 5th, 2008. Jacksonville victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers up in Pittsburgh in the playoffs, 31-29, as your third favorite game in franchise history. Came in just ahead of the Jaguars' demolition of the Miami Dolphins, 62-7, which ended up at number four. You can stay tuned throughout the day. XL Primetime and the Franchise Show will count you down to the game that you voted as your favorite in franchise history, so stick around for that. Let's get to this Jalen Ramsey stuff here, Tony, starting with, you know, a lot of it was – was about his brand and marketing and how marketable he is and what he's trying to do with other players and how he's trying to raise his profile. So it's not all football stuff, but we thought we'd play a couple of these answers anyway. This is Jalen talking about the new deal that he struck with Adidas this offseason.
Man, it has, man. It's been, man, one of the highlights of my offseason so far, honestly. Of course, I was with the Jordan brand, and I had a great relationship with them and my reps there, and that was a good relationship. It was only a few of us in the Jordan family. But at the end of the day, my contract was up with them. I started renegotiating with them, and they also had the opportunity to final match the Adidas deal. But even more so than, of course, the money and everything that played into it, Adidas flew me out to Portland, and what they presented to me was, top of the line, and it just fit everything that I wanted to do and where I wanted to take my brand, and just trying out the cleats, and I liked them, and the gloves, just everything about them was super professional, and it just fit. It was the right move for me business-wise.
Yeah, you better make sure you like those cleats, right? Because, and remember, I mean, the one that stands out in my mind, Corey Pavin won the U.S. Open, and then he got some brand new club deal, and he couldn't hit the new clubs.
Yeah.
And he was stuck. You know, he did the cash grab, which many of us, most of us probably would have taken, by the way. I don't fault Jalen Ramsey for going to Adidas or anybody else. I did find it interesting. He's with the Jordan brand. I mean, Jordan's a big name, and it's not like Nike, which has a billion reps under them, but the Jordan brand had the right of first refusal, it sounded like, according to what Jalen said. So they could have matched that deal. Now, maybe the Jordan brand doesn't play in that economic stratosphere. I'm not sure how it goes, but that was like the thing. Like, I would have explored that more. Like, why didn't Jordan take the Jordan brand take the same deal that was laid out? It's like being a restricted free agent, right? Mm-hmm. You negotiate with this other club. And then if your team has right of first refusal, they can just match that deal. They've got a week to match it and decide to keep you around. And it's always interesting to see how those things are structured. So that, to me, was a more curious thing. Like, I don't care if Jalen wears Adidas or Pumas or New Balance or
– sure.
Doesn't matter to me, you know, and I just want him to play well. And
yeah. I don't have a sponsor, so
– no, and look, I don't begrudge any of these guys. Go make your money. Man, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
You know, look, sponsorship – oh, by the way, you may have – realize, Tony, makes the radio world go around, right?
Sure.
We have sponsors on this program. There's nothing wrong with that. Part of the economy and part of being a higher profile player. He did get into a little bit later. I don't think we're going to hear this particular part, but saying he had guys tell him when he got drafted to Jacksonville, you will never be a national brand. And it makes you wonder how much his – out there personality, the quote, be the bad guy kind of thing, was adopted in part to be a lightning rod of attention. If they're not noticing you, they're not talking about you, and the Jags weren't winning enough games, no matter how well he was playing, for that many people to notice, because not that many people were seeing the Jags play.
Yeah, I know Prisco has said that's one of the first things that he said to Jalen after he got drafted here.
Yeah, adopt that persona.
First conversation he had with him was like, be the bad guy. Be the villain. That's how you'll make your money, man. Like, everyone will know who you are, and if you can play, it pays to be the villain in the NFL, especially at that cornerback spot. Of course, last offseason, one of the big stories, if not the big story with Jalen Ramsey, was the GQ article where he went after all the quarterbacks across the league that he would be playing over the course of that season, and it led to the memorable moment of him with Josh Allen up there in Buffalo and him miming at the sideline, you're trash, that whole deal, because obviously those guys remember those kind of things. Jalen was asked by Adam Schefter if he would be willing to analyze the quarterbacks he would be playing in the 2019 season coming up.
Man, he want to do this again, huh? I'm not going to do this again, but we do play some good quarterbacks this year, of course, but probably the quarterback I'm most excited about is Nick Foles. Don't have to play against him, of course. He is my teammate. He's a great teammate. In the few interactions we've had, it's been great. Great man, great player as well. Has nothing to prove to anybody. He's a Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. So I hope he, you know, comes out here, plays free, knows he has the support of everybody.
That's Jalen. Almost like he threw a switch in his head, right? Oh, here's my plug for Nick Foles, right? Coming up right here. Like here at, he used the word great, I think, in four different capacities. Like great man, great player, great quarterback, great teammate, I think is what he went with on just hitting the broad spectrum there. And, you know, look, I would expect him to say nice things about his quarterback. It is kind of the situation where if you don't have something nice to say, it's best not to say anything. And that's what we talked about last year when he said, you know, I could say some things, but, you know, I can't say them, yep. Basically. You know, you guys know what I want to say. Although you do, when you do that, leave it open to interpretation. Because I remember taking calls at the time. People were saying, is he talking about Todd Walsh? Is he not happy with the way he's being used in the defense? If you're not going to say whatever it is you're not going to say, don't say, I've got something to say, but I can't say it. Because then anyone's going to fill in the blanks with whatever their most negative thought is. And I remember doing that show that we got a can you not think this is about Todd Walsh? How can you not think this is about Blake Bortles? How can you not think this is about whatever? And everyone was so convinced that they were right. Well, he wasn't talking about all those things.
No.
I believe he was talking about the quarterback situation and the offense in general, you know, but he left it open to some interpertation. So there you go.
He certainly did. And Jalen Ramsey, a couple more from him, joining Adam Schefter there on the podcast. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to see from Jalen, he said when we saw him at the mini camp that, look, he's not a leader in the way that most people would expect a player of his caliber to be a leader in an NFL locker room, that he wants to lead a different way.
Do you have to be?
I don't think so.
I think there have been plenty of quiet guys that didn't, and I'm not saying Jalen's a quiet guy, but plenty of guys, for whatever reason, personality, comfort level, didn't embrace that aspect of being a great player.
And I think that was the expectation when Jalen was drafted, because he wasn't the vocal leader guy at FSU.
How often are your cornerbacks your leaders? I mean, I know there's some vocal cornerbacks, but are they considered leaders around the National Football League? I'm not sure if they are.
I'm not saying
that they can't be. It just seems
Sherman
like
Sherman certainly would have been in that category, I think. But there were a bunch of those guys on that defense.
Right. And like he was outspoken, much like Jalen. I don't know if he was seen as a leader in that locker room. Probably. You're probably right about him. But it's not like there's a laundry list of them.
No, there's not a whole long list. That's certainly true. But Jalen said, talking to Adam Schefter on the podcast, that, look, he's growing.
I'm growing, man. It's year four for me, man. It's a different me. A lot of people, you know, they think they know me. They don't really know me. But, hey, that's okay. But we'll get it right.
And then finally, one last quick one. What's one thing you'd like people to know about you that they maybe don't know right now?
They can form opinions on, you know, how this year goes or whatever on the field and whatever. But I'm human just like them. Everybody is human.
There was more to that. You talked about, like, I get spit up on by my kid and all this stuff. And anyway, check it out. The Adam Schefter podcast featuring Doug Marrone and Jalen Ramsey, if you're so inclined. Mention that 97 opening game piece at Jaguars.com. I read through that today. Johnny O posted that. He's been doing a nice job with these, and that was the season opener against the Ravens, who even then had a really good defense. Typically, it just seemed like the Jags would always have their number, at least had some way, unlike other teams, to put up a high point total against them. In this one, it was a 28-27 win for the Jaguars, but historically, we talk about that Jimmy Smith 15-catch game for 291, something like that, that he went for. That came against one of the great defenses of all time with the Ravens, so they just seem to have a knack, and Jimmy even talked about that in the piece. But it was interesting because in the game, Rob Johnson was playing well. He was quoted in the article. He said, look, I played well in the preseason. I had a lot of confidence coming into this game. I knew I was going to start this one, and he goes out there, and then he gets a high ankle sprain.
Yep.
And he has to leave the game, take him to the locker room. Looks like he's not going to play, and he comes back. He's like, look, this is my opportunity. I know I have to seize this, A, not only for my team, but who knows if I'll get another chance to start, right? I mean, if Rob Johnson goes out of that game and doesn't come back and maybe the Jaguars lose, or even if they win with Steve Matthews coming off the bench, and at the time, Rob Johnson, in the article, refresh my memory, Steve Matthews had only been in town for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's like, look, this guy can't know the offense. He's going to be in a bad spot. I've got to go out there. And he said it was really painful even to stand, described, you know, the nature of the injury. Said it even bothers him to this day. Says it's just one of those type injuries that never fully gets right, depending on how severe it was. So anyway, he wins the game, as we all know. And as you pointed out, Tony, he threw a 294.
Mm-hmm. 20 of 24 for 294.
Great, right. Great numbers. And he ran, and he said he was lighter in this camp. He said at USC he bulked up. He used to be a much more of a mobile quarterback. And then he got a little tougher so he could play in the pocket because that's what was expected of him. And when he got to Jacksonville, he thinned out a little bit again and went the other way, and he got his mobility back. But he said because of that injury, he didn't have that in this game once he got hurt. And so he was restricted to being a pocket quarterback. He said, I just kind of reverted to my old Trojan ways, and it paid off handsomely because the Jags go on to use that small sample size to entice Buffalo to give them the pick that turned into Fred Taylor, and they got a fourth-round pick, which they turned into Tavian Banks, which was an incredible haul for what was Rob Johnson, a third-round pick in 95, I want to say, right? And then you think about it. What happens the next week, Tony? Rob Johnson's hurt. He can't play. Enter Steve Matthews, mm-hmm. who now by this second week has been on the roster for, what, 10 days?
Yep, week and a half.
They play the New York Giants, and they hang 40 on the New York Giants. Yeah. At the time, a Jaguar franchise record for points, if
yeah,
I'm
that
not
offense
mistaken.
Was pretty good.
They were unbelievable, right? Do you think maybe the Buffalo Bills should have gone,
Right, like that's maybe the most interesting side note to that entire story that John wrote, talking about that one game that Rob Johnson played. It's that here's the guy that is talking about an ankle injury that he suffered that day that still bothers him when he skis.
Right.
Right, and Buffalo gave up what they did to get him. This is a guy who had an ankle injury that is severe enough that 20 years later, it still bothers him.
Right. He played one game, looked great, admittedly, but tell me Steve Matthews didn't look great. And the thing is, it was interesting to read. Jimmy and Keenan are quoted in this, particularly Keenan in this part, saying that Tom Coughlin came to them and said, look, it's not on Steve Matthews. It's on the two of you to get wide open. We're paying you to get wide open, to make this day as easy on him as possible. And they took it as a big challenge and all this stuff. And I'm sure, you know, I don't have that tape rolling in my mind, but I'm sure they got plenty wide open for Steve Matthews to hang 40 on the New York Giants. And again, you know, you go back and you think, well, yeah, Rob Johnson had those pieces he was working with, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it boggles the mind now in hindsight to think that, now granted, he was a somewhat considered quarterback. I mean, he was a third-round pick, but that's not like he was a first-round pick.
No.
Right? I mean, it wasn't like he was percolating on the bench as a surefire, can't-miss guy, and then he flashed so well in that one game. And honestly, the injury probably helped the Jags' chances because, A, he comes back, he shows toughness, right? He shows leadership. He comes back off the bench, and he wins the game with a touchdown to Jimmy Smith in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can't play.
Yeah.
And then it's
yeah, he's
it's,
basically saying he's on – he wanted to play game two.
I could have,
yeah.
Right.
And he was like, I was on the sideline. I told him I could go if they needed me to go. Like, I'll go stand back there. And then he's like, I couldn't have done it.
He goes, I was in a cast. I was literally in a cast. I could not have played, but I was in full uniform ready to go if necessary. And it worked out perfect because you're like, the only impression you got of Rob Johnson was, damn, this guy's a star.
Yeah.
He's going to be a star.
Yeah.
And, you know, in all fairness, as we pointed out, in 99, the Music City Miracle game was a miracle was necessary for Tennessee because Rob Johnson led the Bills down the field in the final couple minutes of the game for the go-ahead score to what, by 99.999, and put all the nines you want after it, percent chance that you're going to win that football game against the Tennessee Titans. Only the flukiest of fluky. I mean, it was a great play that they set up with the return, but how often is that thing going to work and go the distance? Not very often.
You know, 1% of the time.
And who knows what would happen with Rob Johnson at that point?
Yeah, who knows? And I thought it's interesting, too, if you get a chance to read the article there on Jaguars.com and this story, and he's done a bunch of them. Like, he's been through the two playoff games in 96. Now he's doing the first game in 97 here. But I think it's interesting listening to teammates of Tony Vaselli still talk about Tony Vaselli. And it's just so much fun. Like,
Jimmy Smith's like, man, we throw to my side all the time because Tony was just destroying the whole left side of the offensive line.
Rob Johnson on an almost broken leg. It's like he can't do anything but drop back. He's just going to be standing there.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right, because he had Leon on one side and he had Tony.
Didn't matter.
And you could do that if you could throw it. And he could throw it particularly on that day. So good read. Go check it out. If you are so inclined to do that as well. We'll come back. A little piece at NFL.com that has a Jaguar tie-in that we'll get to about the breakout pass rush candidates. And we'll look at some of your responses to the question of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916, asking you which athlete in any sport would you most like to listen to if they hosted their own podcast. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today, on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
So just in the last 30 minutes or so, somebody noted on Twitter that, at My Sports Update, noted that, you know, Jalen last August did an interview with GQ, even though, I don't know if he did it in August, it came out in August, that, you know, basically trashed a bunch of NFL quarterbacks, and that in referencing the Adam Schefter podcast where we just played a few clips from Jalen, he declined to do that, instead praised Nick Foles, and then thus his maturity was praised in this tweet. To which Jalen replied about 30 minutes ago, LOL, don't get it twisted though. I'ma still talk my, and then the poop emoji. I'ma still talk my poop when the time comes. You can grow and still talk your talk. Hashtag season almost here. Hashtag I'm back. Hashtag relentless. Hashtag, hashtag, hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
There you go. Don't get it twisted, Tony.
Don't get it twisted.
He may be.
It's the same old Jalen.
Right. Because, you know, what goes on in the field doesn't get broadcast as readily as when you're sitting down with a reporter.
Yes.
You know, for a podcast or a story. So you can flap your gums out there if you so choose. I just wanted to highlight this quickly. This was a piece on NFL.com, the young pass rushers that are set to break out in 2019. Very first one listed is Josh Allen of the Jaguars. Now, granted, anything he does is a bit of a breakout because he hasn't played yet in the National Football League. Projection for 2019, 10 sacks. See, Ozier last week was like, I don't think you can expect 10. Like I said, in the scenario, if Unique did not play, I damn right I would expect 10 sacks out of Josh Allen, provided that he stayed healthy. I mean, the guy's supposed to be the best pass rusher in the draft, or one of the very best pass rushers in the draft, SEC Defensive Player of the Year with 17 sacks and blah, blah, blah. If he really were the starting right defensive end for 16 games, yeah, I would. Otherwise, what are we talking about here? I mean, Bradley Chubb did it last year and got 12. And yes, Von Miller draws attention, so does Calais, right? And at the same time, Von Miller gobbles up a lot of sacks, right? So,
sure.
You know, our opportunities. So, anyway, this was what, let me see who did the piece here at NFL.com. Oh, this is by Willie McGinnis, okay? Knows a little something about it. He says, Allen was his top pass rusher in this year's draft class. Jags got a major steal. He compares to players like Whitney Mercilus, who entered the league as a big, versatile prospect, as a disruptive force coming off the edge, great speed, found success with several pass rush moves. The rip being one of the most commonly is his go-to move, and he'll need to further develop his repertoire, blah, 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 blah. He does go on to say, talking about Ngakoue, he says, Unique Ngakoue skipped mandatory minicamp earlier this month in hopes of getting a new contract, so Allen could find himself being a day one starter if Ngakoue and the Jags can't agree on a deal soon. Don't see that being any way, shape, or form a possibility.
I don't either.
I mean, it's a possibility, right? Don't get me wrong. But on the very narrowest of bands, I did look up the CBA, the Collective Bargaining Agreement, online. You could find it. Just put NFL Collective Bargaining Agreement. It's about the fourth thing down. Look for the PDF file, okay? And it's got in there the conditions for an accrued season. And as John Osier has been pointing out for the last couple weeks, yes, there's an A and a B. There's an A that says you have to be on an NFL roster for six games, okay? So that covers – that's at a minimum. So that covers guys who are A, franchise tag.
Mm-hmm.
We're not under contract. You better get under contract. You better show up and at least show up for the last six games, or that season is not going to count.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, if you're under contract, you do have to show up 30 days prior to the start of the regular season and to basically be there the whole time. You say you can't have a material absence from the team. I'm not sure the exact language that they use, but basically you can't just show up, say I'm here, and then disappear. You know, if you've got a legitimate reason to be away for a week or whatever, and there are exceptions to it. But for the most part, if Yannick Ngakoue wants to be an unrestricted free agent, where worst case scenario, he gets a franchise tag and is guaranteed $18.5 million or whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to show up 30 days prior to the start of the season. There's no way in hell, in my opinion, Yannick Ngakoue risks not being an unrestricted free agent. Still doesn't mean you're free because they do have the franchise tag, but if you're a restricted free agent, they can restrict you without even, and then have the franchise tag to use on Miles Jack or somebody else, and that benefits the Jags. It does not benefit you.
Right.
Because either the team that signs you is going to have to give up compensation to get you, or the Jags are going to have the right to match whatever offer you find out there, and it you're not truly as free as you'd like to be. So I just don't think there's any likelihood of Yannick Ngakoue not showing up for training camp.
No, my expectation would be that he's here.
At least 30
camp.
Days.
Yeah.
Now, whether he misses a few days and hits that 30-day mark,
sure,
whatever, you know, but he will be here 30 days prior to the start of the season.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And
which doesn't mean he has to be here July 25th, by the way.
No.
Right? He's got a little bit of wiggle room on that.
And I think it puts it back in the camp where I thought this was going before Yannick Ngakoue decided to not come out for the mini camp, which I've thought for a while now that this was heading towards he's going to play under the fourth year of his deal, they're going to franchise him, and then maybe they get something done, maybe they don't, going into next season. Right, but I expected the franchise tag to be applied to Yannick Ngakoue at some point. That's the way it felt like it was playing out to me. And then the holdout started, and then it's, well, how long can he hold out? And there were some stories that were saying, well, now he doesn't have to be here for the first 10 games or whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then the clarification that he has to be here 30 days before the start of the regular season. From a Jaguars perspective, if Yannick Ngakoue is asking for $20 million a year, when are they going to give him that money, considering it's going to cost him $20 million for the next 2 years? Right. If you look at that franchise tag and this season, what is the impetus for them to make that happen now? Right. And maybe there's some way you can work out a long term deal where.
Well, the impetus would be if he would take $17.5 million a year.
Right. And if it was, you know, you can probably figure out a way to make it $20 million for the first 2 years. You could probably figure out a way to do that from a contract perspective. But I think it puts it back squarely in the, I think the most likely scenario, at least to me at this point, is he plays the fourth year under his rookie deal and then gets franchise tag is where I think this is going right now.
Right. If it doesn't get worked out, they're not going to let him walk for no compensation.
No.
So I'm with you. That's where I think it is. By the way, looking at Jalen's Twitter page, just looking at this photo, for whatever reason, it's popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
I know I mentioned this last year when it happened. When I got back from the UK, I was in Dalkey, Ireland, D-A-L-K-E-Y. It's right below Dublin. It's where my dad was born. My aunt Sheila still lives there. I've got cousins there. And so we were visiting that on our UK trip. We're there, and I'm in this little pub called the Queen's Pub. It's where everybody meets. I mean, Dalkey is a tiny little dot on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in there, and I'm wearing a Jaguar windbreaker, and this guy comes in. I for the life of me, just can't remember his name, but I have the photo. And the reason that's why I'm thinking of this, I was going through some old vacation photos a couple of weeks ago, and I got a photo with me and this guy, and the guy goes, you're a Jaguar fan? I said, well, you know, I explained, you know, I cover the team, and I want them to do well, and I work on their game day radio broadcasts and all this stuff. So, you know, however, you categorize that, sure. You know, I'm a Jaguar supporter. And he's like, yeah, I was Jalen Ramsey's trainer in high school. And I'm like, what? How small is the freaking world, right? That this little pub
right,
in this
yeah.
little town and the tiniest dot on the map, and this guy, you know, it's just, what a small world, man. Just what a weird thing. And I've been mean, and I'd forgotten all about it since I got back last year. And the next time I see Jalen, I've got that photo. I'm going to say, do you recognize this guy? And see what his reaction to that is and tell him the story. Tony, quickly, if you could give us some, I tell you what, we'll do this on the other side. Let's welcome in XL Primetime and Joe Coward first.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit moescateringfl.com.
Yeah, and of course, the thing we're talking about doing is going through which athlete you'd like to hear host their own podcast. Joe Cowart is along with us now. XL Primetime on location live at the Ritz. What's going on out there, Joey?
Well, this is a cool place. It's Ritz Safety, which means it can just really help every other business that's in my blue-collar world, Mikey. You know that's where I grew up, in the blue-collar world. And so we're talking about all sorts of industry, invited to come out here and check out all their safety equipment. And they've got all sorts of things set up today. Ritz Safety, we're about a half mile shy of Walmart on Phillips Highway. So north of University, a half mile south of Walmart. But definitely coming by. They got the food truck set up and all kinds of stuff. So we're having fun, dude.
Nice. All right. What are you guys talking about on today's show?
Well, you know, you got that Kansas City topic with the guy going after the, you know, the family situation with Andy Reid. So we're definitely going to jump into that. We got some college football stuff that we'll throw out there. Pat Dooley in the Gainesville Sun said for Gator fans that the Missouri game is going to be tougher than the Florida State game in terms of importance and needing to win that game. So we got some college football and some NFL that we'll throw at him. Then, of course, the NBA heating up a little bit with this whole free agency talk. Is Kevin Durant for real going to stay or for real going to go?
Man, I would take all that that money that I could possibly get. It's hard to imagine turning down an extra $40, $50 million to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good work if you can get it, Joey. Have a great show today, man.
All right, dude. Thanks.
All right, along with Hacker and Matt Hayes and Big Leon Searcy, they'll be out at the Ritz Safety Open House. Tony, we asked folks today, which athlete you'd like to listen to host their own podcast? Give us a sampling of the responses.
Sure. From Slovene Jaguar, we got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and yeah, I'd be subscribed to that the day that it happened.
What is it about him? He's a soccer player.
He's just his personality. He's so egotistical.
Oh, really?
Like, it is insane. Like, when he showed up in L.A. to play in the MLS, his first game there, he scored a goal from midfield. Right, so he's doing the post game interview, and he said the people want Zlatan. I give them Zlatan. Like, he's just that type of personality. I would love to hear what he would have to say. Kenny said Mike Tyson. I think Tyson has one right now. Dan said Colin Kaepernick. Chad put in Tommy McManus, who you can hear one day a week here on Jaguars Today. From TY, we got a science oriented podcast hosted by Kyrie Irving. That's pretty good work right there. From Sean, Dennis Rodman. We got a vote here for Peyton Manning, Gronkowski, of course, got a vote. And then from Crash, how about co-hosts with Nolan Ryan and Robin Ventura talk about baseball, kicking A, and how to get your butt kicked. So I guess they can talk for a few minutes about
right.
that.
Right, after that's
fight.
Done, though, I mean, is there anything you want to hear from Robin Ventura?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out, like, who is today's Yogi, right? Because Yogi Berra hosting a podcast, I think, would be fascinating with all the stories that he could tell and the people
especially
he could get
since
on.
He's dead now.
Right. But, like, when he was doing his thing,
I gotcha.
Yogi's kind of that guy. And I don't know who would be today's Yogi.
I have to think
Yogi.
About that one. I don't know. Just the guy who says the kind of screwball things. It kind of makes sense in one regard, but
I think, like, Dick
none.
LeBeau would be fascinating.
Okay.
Because he's been such an accomplished coach. He was an accomplished player.
Well, when I think of Yogi saying some off-the-wall thing.
Oh, sure. But, you know, Dick's been around it now for 65 years, so the stories he would have to tell I think would be interesting. I don't know. It would be somebody along those
lines. I'll think
lines
about that
me.
One.
Yeah.
See if I can come up with a good answer for you. Last one, we'll close out on the text line, Built by Lifetime Enclosures. You guys are delirious. Jan is not coming to camp without a new deal this year. And then he goes on to say $2 million not worth an injury. Okay, again, if you don't show up and you don't accrue that season, you're not an unrestricted free agent next year.
Yeah.
So
you're not getting the 20 on the other end of it if
no,
you don't show up.
No. So what are you going to do then? Exactly. I mean, okay, $2 million is not worth an injury. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Not show up and not be an unrestricted free agent? Right? I mean, look, if you're a restricted free agent, you could still break the bank. But teams are – if the Jags put the first-round tender on him, that means the team knows they're going to have to give up a first-round pick and the big contract.
Sure.
And they're going to want a little bit of a discount
sure.
if they're giving up a first-round pick. So if you want to max out your money.
Look, I think we're both in that. I want Jan to get paid, right? Like, I want him to be here. I think Jan's a really.
I want it to work out for both.
Right. And look, the team's going to play it the way the team needs to play it. And whatever, this isn't as simple as Jan deserves to get paid. We're going to pay him. There are other things going on here. And he has to be here 30 days before the season starts. If you think he's. I just can't imagine a scenario where the advice to Yannick Ngakoue would be hold out.
Right, hold out to the point where you don't have the season count towards free agency.
I can't imagine
if he were
doing it.
If he had 4 years in, it would be a different story.
Yeah,
right. It'd be in a completely different situation.
Absolutely.
Any player that has 4 years and their contract's up automatically, but you don't. This fourth year, which is coming up, doesn't count as a quote accrued season towards free agency unless, according to the collective bargaining agreement, unless you show up 30 days prior to the start of the season.
Yeah.
So. You know, we'll
he's
see.
He's between a rock and a hard place.
If it's 4 weeks before the start of the season, he's not here, I'll eat my words and say, man, this guy's playing some kind of hardball. And maybe it'll work out because you could theoretically do that and still get a long-term deal with the Jags and it'll all work out for you. But
sure.
If they don't blink and they just sit there and go, all right, you know what, we're going to roll with Josh Allen here and we're going to control you under a restricted free agent tag next year.
Yeah.
Instead of having to use the franchise tag on you, okay.
And I get it. Maybe you don't like having the franchise tag applied, but that's $18.5 guaranteed $1 million. That's off the table. They can't franchise a guy that's a restricted free agent. It's only available to unrestricted free agents.
Right.
So that money, poof, it's gone. And unless they're going to work out a long-term deal with, like, you have to know it's going to happen. And
Big risk to take. We'll have plenty of time to continue to talk about that, but not today because we are flat out of time. Stick around. XL Primetime coming your way from Ritz Safety, the open house, and that'll do it for us today. For ET, for Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Back again tomorrow from 10 to noon with Jaguars Today right here on 1010 XL and on 92.5 FM.
Joe Jacksonville, let's go. Two more.